This is study number 13, studies on the time of the end. And again, we're keep finding more stuff to keep talking about here, but it's a blessing, and I'm being blessed by it. I pray that you are as well. Last study number 12, we were talking about these two freedoms, how they can be abused. These freedoms are from these two lamb-like horns of heavenly origin are only good to those who have this power to do what is good. But if you give that freedom to people that don't want to do what's good, but want to do evil, it's not a good idea, is it? And so we saw that the French Revolution was how it looks like when God is out of the equation, because only God is good. And so whether it's civil liberty or whether it's religious liberty, God is the one that is motivating you to do good. Not steal your neighbor's car or lie or gossip and backbite. And worship the Lord without being harassed. And it brings in all the other. The true freedom comes from what? The boundaries of the law of God. See, on the religious liberty horn, not worshiping idols, taking the Lord's name in vain, and keeping the Sabbath holy. These are freedom. This is freedom when you're worshiping God on His holy Sabbath day. And then the other freedoms, the other horn, the civil horns, starts with commandment number 5. Marriage between one man and one woman. Thou shalt honor thy mother and father. And the promise, read that commandment, the promise is that the land will be blessed. Your life will be prolonged. There's no freedom in homosexuals marrying each other. That's a deception. That's a lie. That's bondage. And that's what the French Revolution did. So Ellen White tells us in the Great Controversy, the law of God was openly set aside, and that's what you see happening here. Under the guise of Christianity, we've got homosexuals that say they're Christians and that God made them this way. What a lie that is. The law of God was set aside, she tells us, by the National Council during the Paris mobs, during the French Revolution. And in the reign of terror which followed, the working of the cause and effect could be seen by all. In a more polite and camouflaged form, a similar war upon the Bible is being seen today. How? See, that was an outright explosion there in the French Revolution. And the world stood aghast. They were astonished, blown away by the insanity that unleashed so very quickly. People's heads were being chopped off like crazy. Even the people that started the French Revolution had their heads lopped off. Satan toned it down. But it's still, there's still a war upon the Bible even right now. Oh, everybody's got Bibles. There's Bibles in hotel rooms. Every house has 2-3 Bibles. We got Bibles hanging out of our ears, right? But there's a war upon the Bible, and it's seen today, how? In the anti-Genesis apostasy. You can go to a museum right now, if it's open, and you'll see evolution all over the place. You'll see even phenomenal doctors that are into eating whole plant foods, talking about 100 million years ago, 100,000 years ago, on and on and on, referencing evolution. It's anti-Genesis. It's against the first angel's message. It's against the Declaration of Independence. The founding fathers in the civil horn said, God is our creator, that he given us unalienable rights. A creator, not an evolutionist. And of course, the first angel's message in the liberty, religious liberty horn says, worship him who what? Made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that that is. That's Revelation 14, verse 6, right? So we see in a more polite, a more camouflaged, more civil manner, right? There's a war upon the Bible in this anti-Genesis apostasy, which has spread over the entire world since the time of Darwin's theory of evolution. And of course, all of this was in play during the French Revolution. In our modern world, however, we are as yet in only the early stages of this revolution. We are witnessing on every hand the wonderful material results of these two freedoms. And we hear it. And it's true. The middle class, people owning property. I've listened to people on the radio, interviews. Ladies talking, yep, I'm living in Paris now, and I, you know, in my younger days, I invested in some, you know, some property, and I've got rental, and I've got people paying me, and I flipped a couple of houses, and, you know, so I've got a nice little income coming in, and so I decided to go to Paris and live for a few years, and I got a nice little subsidy. That's never happened. The only way you could live like that is if you were a prince. Some kind of royalty, a monarchy, or a pope. But the peasants, say, the feudal system, you know, you had dirty faces, no teeth, and you lived in a smoke-filled cabin, and you had to till the soil and give most of it to the king. But the middle class is a fruit of the Reformation. It's a fruit of these two lamb-like horns, say. Comes from God, where people can have their own business before all this coronavirus came, but still people do have now. They got a nice little business, they got a nice little income coming in, and they can take a nice vacation, they can buy a house, build a new house. You know, we had friends living next to us, they lived next to us for a couple of years while their new house was being built. And they had a sandwich shop. A sandwich shop that's been in the family for years. And they made a great income. Both the husband and the wife had new cars, a nice new trailer, and they were having a new house built. They weren't billionaires, but they were living quite comfortably. It's called the middle class. That's never happened in history before like this. Never. Where people can have a nice, comfortable life and travel and go on vacation and buy a new car. You know, it's amazing. And so this material, this materialistic results of these two freedoms have never been seen before. And there, it's touted in the politics. Unemployment is way down. Businesses are up. Prosperity, income has increased. All of this stuff, right? And it makes this a great nation. Why is it so great? Because of these two freedoms. These spectacular results, of course, have been timed and planned by divine providence. Why? Just so as we can have a nice middle class life? Well, God does want us to be blessed, but there's a greater good than this. And this is where, as Adventists, we need to be very focused on. Not social gospels, not social issues, social justice, doing things that God's called other groups to do. But what was this plan for? These spectacular results, living in an environment like this, was timed by the divine providence for the purpose of what? In assisting and spreading the gospel of God's last message of mercy to a dying world, to bring this world to an end, to close probation. The closing of probation is not bad news, it's good news. It means that at some point in your growth, you are sealed and your probation is closed as to whether or not you are made your final decision into be in the kingdom of God. See, the song says, Take my heart, Lord, take and seal it. Take it, seal it for the courts above. Prone to wander, wander from the God I love. See? Well, that prone to wander is taken care of, finally. So when probation closes, you're not prone to wander. Oh, Satan's going to attack your faith. Oh, God doesn't want anything to do with you. You're lost. You did this wrong, and so on and so forth. You know, but your heart is with the Lord. And if you're lost, you say, it's just that I am lost. See? So probation closing is a good thing. It's not so good for the wicked. And God's not wanting the wicked to be lost. He wants them to be saved. He is not willing that any should perish, the Bible says. Isn't that so? All right. Unfortunately, not everybody wants to be saved. And so the purpose of this country coming into existence was one purpose that God had in mind, and that was to promote and promulgate and give with a loud cry the third angel's message all over the world. They are accomplishing this result in a spectacular way. But Satan has seized and exploited this to make them seem like human development. That the purpose of the United States is for human development. So we got atheism and socialism and evolution and all this nonsense going on. The arguments you hear today in the political realm that, you know, we're going to global climate change and this and that. You know what causes climate change? Sin. Debauchery. Corruption. How did the climate change for the antediluvians? You think they were driving around fossil fuel cars? No. It was their lifestyle that caused the flood. See? The bewitching, intoxicating effects of this doctrine of human development, of world progress. It's stated in the prophecy of Revelation 13:14. Maybe you didn't see it there. But here's what it says. Them that dwell on the earth, by the means of those miracles which he had power to do, the devil. And by those miracles that he has power to do, has to do with this utopian idea, the ideology of the beast, the dragon, and the false prophet. And probably what we have seen may be little or more than the beginning. No one needs to be reminded that there's always a debit side to the account of the two horns. Liberty and knowledge are not intrinsically regenerative or even necessarily good in and of themselves. They're a blessing, but not necessarily good. They're only forms of personal power. Alfred the Great, the King of England, said 1,000 years ago, power is never good unless he be good who has it. I've seen that happen to people. I've seen people that were good people, loving people, broke as a church mouse, all of a sudden has a windfall of a lot of money. And they enjoy blessing people with that money. They've helped people build houses. They've loaned money out. They've donated money. And they do it with a big sparkling eye and a big, pleasant, benevolent face. They love it. God can trust somebody like that with a lot of money. See, so that's what Alfred the Great was saying. Power is never good unless he be good who has it. Since the great majority of mankind are rebels against their creator and persist in remaining rebels, and increase their power can only result in an increase of their rebellion. That's what you see in politics today. Here's the House Speaker. Just playing politics at the expense of people that are suffering and trying to promote sick, corrupt lifestyles. Transgenderism. I'm sorry, it's sick. Homosexuality. Sick. And so when you give power to people like this, what do they do with their power? It increases their rebellion. The Paris mobs of 1793 gave a brief rehearsal of the natural results, or a display of the results of freedom in the hands of Satan-led crowds. That's what you see happening. When you give freedom to Satan-led rebellious crowds, that's what they do with it. We got this freedom written in the First Amendment of the Constitution. It says we have a right to address our grievances in peaceful protests. You know what the wicked do with that? They use that freedom to destroy and destroy burning down buildings, smashing windows on stores and looting them, and beating people up and shooting people and starting cars on fire. You think that's what the framers of the Constitution were thinking about? You think that's what God meant by freedom? You know, you have a right to protest peacefully against the government, not against a neighborhood in the suburbia, in a quiet residential area where people are outside cutting the grass or trimming their flowers, or little kids are playing in the backyard, and you come marching down the street tearing up houses and throwing bricks, rocks through the windows and punching people out. No, that's not your freedom. That's rebellion. And that's what happens when you give a rebellious, satanic, possessed people freedom. They misuse it. They abuse it. Power is never good unless he is good who has the power. A government of the people, by the people, and for the people are people that are good, not criminals. There's no government of the people, by the people, and for the people in a prison. Where'd you get that idea from? There's guards in that prison. There's cells in that prison. You can't come and go as you please. You can't govern yourself. You got eyes on you. But if you behave yourself, you're fine. You're free as a bird. You can come and go as you please. And the preparation of the final act of rebellion are seen shaping up in the rapid disintegration and demoralization of the only conspicuous example of democratic government which has ever been able to last more than 100 years. The tyranny of autocrats has often been seen and is certainly bad enough. But the autocrats were a special wealthy group of people. And we've seen how, if you study history, you can see how often you can see the tyranny of these kinds of people. But no horror can equal that of frenzied or hysterical anarchy, liberty that is changed to license. That's, folks, are you not seeing this happening? You can turn your TV set on right now and see riots in Oregon, Portland, and see it going on in Philadelphia and different places of the country right now. You can see it happening in Paris. A school teacher had his head cut off by some crazy terrorist guy because he said something about Muhammad. See? No horror can equal that of frenzied or hysterical anarchy, liberty that is changed into license. The visible approach of this beast from the abyss is spoken of in Revelation 17, verse 8, where the anticipation of just such a state of affairs is described as making all of the world to wander after. The whole world is going to be in an hysterical anarchy. Do you know that? Do you understand that? There's not going to be any place to go. And there is a place to go, though, for those who want to take the time to think about it. It's under his wings. It's a song, actually. Under his wings, I am safely abiding. See? Under his wings. Hidden Christ. Under the three angels' messages. There you find peace. There you find protection. Oh, that doesn't mean, you know, you're not going to go through some trials. Of course you will. But you'll have a Savior, a Redeemer, a Creator, a King, God with you. When the three Hebrew worthies were thrown into the fire, what did Nebuchadnezzar say? Wait a minute, I thought we threw three guys in there. I see the fourth, like unto the Son of God. That's right. So there is a place for safety. But if you're not going to take advantage of that now, you're not going to take advantage of it then. You won't even know that it's available. You'll be caught up with the anticipation and the horrors of a frenzied, hysterical anarchy. And this is what is making all the world wonder, because they realize that this beast of intolerance and oppression, which was, and then when the deadly wound was inflicted, is not, and then when the deadly wound is healed, is coming. That's what Revelation 17:8 is talking about. And so the glacier-like advance of this horror of mob psychology and mass hysteria on a national and international scale helps strongly to make many thoughtful persons feel tolerant toward a strong, centralized, authoritarian government like the Catholic Church. Can you see this happening? Who, the Catholic Church, in accord with the remark of a witty Frenchman who declared that he would rather be eaten by one lion than by a thousand rats. While the crazed mobs recognize no creator above and no code from Sinai as a moral guide, but only the Darwinian dogma that man is a developing animal and will become good if only given a chance and made free from all restraints. See, that's what transgenderism is. These are men. These are males. These are boys that want to be girls. These are girls that want to be boys, and they don't want to be restrained. Whatever in satanic, fallen human nature thought that, you know, pops up in their heads, they don't want to be restrained. They don't want to restrain that thought. But they have fallen human natures. They're depraved. And so when you're looked at from the evolutionary side of things, being an evolutionist, which is atheism, then the idea is that you can become good only if given a chance when you remove all restraints and when all questions, both civil and religious, are to be decided at the hustings of the vote of the majority under the hypnotizing spell of clever demagogues, how can the result fail to follow as declared in the prophecy, he will speak as a dragon? See. Revelation 13:11. In a broader aspect of the case, as has been stated, this false prophet that we're studying right now symbolizes those utopian dreams of a century ago, over 100 years ago, by granting everybody liberty to live as he pleases, all the troubles of humanity would be solved. Obviously, this was a suggestion of the father of lies. The father of lies, his arguments, his ideology is so seductive, it's fatal and deceiving of an entire modern environment in which we are obliged to live in. And it's vividly stated by the prophet herself in the book Spiritual Gifts, Volume 2, page 277, where it says, quote, "The power of Satan now to tempt and deceive is tenfold greater than it was in the days of the apostles," close quote. Now, she wrote that in the 1800s. What do you think it is in the year 2020? This means that the deceptive power of the false prophet is 10 times as strong, 10 times as effective as was the power of the Roman dragon was. And this helps to explain why the work of the false prophet has been reserved as the last on the divine program. Under this false prophet, Satan is doing his utmost. The Lord allows him to do everything he can. When the career of this last deceiver is complete, human probation will have to have been finished, for the devil has no more tricks to try. He will then have done his worst. So, the devil has no more tricks to try when human probation will be finished. See, everybody will see clearly what the issues are. No one will be without excuse. What that means on the positive side, it'll be crystal clear who's the good guy and the blessings of being with the good guy is. You see that? Why would somebody ever want to be on the devil's side is crazy. But the devil will have no more tricks to try. He will then have done his worst. But this utopian dream has served the useful purpose of giving the true Church of Christ a rest from persecution for the moment. During this period of the deadly wound, the church has had opportunity to carry the gospel. That's why we have Adventists all over the planet, you know, in different nations all over the place. Not in every nation, but in most of them. False doctrines on any subject are never harmless. In a world of sin and sinners, even such seemingly harmless ideas as religious and civil liberty can be twisted into agencies of evil. In Eden, the fruit of the tree of knowledge was not forbidden because it was poisonous for the body, but because any knowledge gained contrary to a command of God must surely become poison for the soul. And that's what we're realizing right now. Man shall not live by bread alone, but by what? Every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Now, this is a lesson we all need to learn, myself included, number one. See, We still have this fallen human nature knee-jerk reaction that somehow something from the world takes the edge off. But the truth is, you know, God's created everything. He's created every reality. He's created life. He's created sunshine and trees and birds and flowers and family and love and loved ones and all of the wonderful things that we enjoy in life that are the most important to us. It's not money and wealth. It's people. Isn't that not so? Be with somebody that loves you and that you love. Isn't that the best ever? For real? I'm talking about genuine, not people just with a mask on. And today that could be so many weird things, but you know, putting a facade on. And as soon as you leave, they just talk about you like a dog. No, no, we're not talking about that kind of garbage. But people that genuinely love you and you genuinely love them and you enjoy each other's company. Children, grandchildren, husbands, wives, friends, neighbors, brethren in the church, the Lord, angels, see. So in the Garden of Eden, the fruit of the tree of knowledge was not forbidden because it was poisonous. No, it was because the knowledge that was gained that was contrary to the commandment of God would become poison for the soul. When Lot pitched his tent towards Sodom, he had good ambitions. He was planning for a better social and intellectual opportunity for himself and his family, but freedom and cultural opportunities like power that's spoken of by King Alfred the Great are only good when those who have them are good. See? So if you have money, if you have power, if you have a good place to live and so on, it's only good for you if you're using them for good. And the Lord and you will figure that out. See? The conditions Lot found in Sodom were only those which everybody wants to attain. Pride, fullness of bread, and abundance of idleness. That's what Ezekiel 16 says. They were proud, a lot of food to eat, and they were idle as can be. One of the last lessons that the Creator designs to demonstrate before the world and the onlooking universe is that unfettered freedom and wide vistas of opportunities are not unmixed blessings for unregenerate human beings. Of themselves, men have no power to cure pride or selfishness or sin. And like all good gifts that are of God, they can be abused and be turned to evil uses. So freedom can be used for evil. One of the final lessons of human history is an eternal exhibit before the intelligent universe is that these two lamb-like horns will become tools that will be used by the false prophet for the deception and seduction of mankind in the final crises of human history, the Armageddon of mankind against the Almighty. Just one more point. The last half of Revelation 13 deals with the clever deceptions of the false prophet by which he befools the earth dwellers into doing evil things contrary to the cause of God and thus brings on the final crises for all of the world. As already stated, the ones thus deceived are the last generation of mankind, obviously the most sophisticated and most scientifically educated of all the long line of humanity, a most surprising situation. Only one specific trick of deception is mentioned, and that he brings fire down from heaven in the sight of men. That is, in public. Many have thought of this as a similar work of Elijah on Mount Carmel, but the text does not say that he prepares for this as a test. It simply declares that he does this in a public way, and afterward appeals to this work which he has done as proof of his miraculous power. And the record seems to imply that this act is only one of several of similar character and for a similar purpose. Amazing acts are characteristic of this false prophet. And the Bible speaks of them not as mere tricks, but a genuine sign or wonder or a miracle, as it says in the King James. Now, what is a miracle? Probably we would say everything that God does is natural or in accord with all of his basic laws for the universe. But from our limited point of view, thousands of events which are commonplace to us, like x-rays, radio, guided missiles, television, which would seem like genuine miracles to our grandparents or great-grandparents, our minds are so constituted that even the most amazing event is repeated a few times, though no man of science can give a sensible explanation, we are inclined to class it as only according to natural law, not very wonderful at all. Almost any modern scientific event would be a miracle to us if it occurred only once, or if we saw it for the first time. Okay, so we look around us in the world today, and we see in the Western culture, civilization of our time, headed by America, which seems to be the fulfillment of prophecy, and the spectacular scientific achievements of our day fit perfectly into this picture. Whenever we can shake off the unholy hypnotic spell that these achievements have thrown over our minds and wake up to the solemn and terrifying fact that the resultant of them all is in the wrong direction, away from God, away from his truth. Of course, if any of our readers persist into thinking that the prevailing theories in biology or geology or atomic physics are factual or in harmony with the basic principles of Christianity, Brother Price says he has nothing more he can say. But Ellen White wrote in The Great Controversy, "Thus the false sciences of the present day, which undermines faith in the Bible, will prove as successful in preparing the way for the acceptance of the papacy with its pleasing forms as did the withholding of knowledge in opening the way for its aggrandizement in the Dark Ages." So we can see now how the amazing wonders or miracles that are performed by the false prophet are slowly but surely deceiving the earth dwellers and causing them to worship the first beast whose deadly wound is being healed. This is the end of the study of the false prophet. God bless you as you ponder and think on these things is my prayer.